From inside Erstad Recordings in Peekskill, New York, welcome to A Thousand Exits, a podcast at the corner of martial arts and life's journey.
Here we share our insights into training and talk to those that have shaped our daily practice.
We explore what the martial arts mean to us on a personal level and discuss their broader impact on society and culture. Our passion is the common person's experience in the martial arts.
Bend your legs, plant your feet, relax, and let's go.
It's already started. We got to jump in. Here we go. Hey, Paco.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Hey, Dan, do you realize it's a new year since we last talked?
That's right. Happy New Year to
you. Happy New Year and Happy New Year to our listeners.
That's right. That's very exciting. I mean, you know, we'll see what the future holds, but it's always nice to get that turning of the page.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
Unless you have a problem with aging. In that case, I feel like it's not quite as fun.
I am very old. And this is something that
I'm getting there.
I don't want to reveal to our listeners yet. I do have a problem with that, but I still enjoy the new year.
Yeah.
And I do want to not only say Happy New Year to our listeners, I do want to thank them.
Yeah.
Because we have had, Dan, we have had an incredible response. We have been really impressed by how many people have been listening to the podcast. To be honest, we didn't have much expectation.
Yeah.
We didn't really do much promotion of
it. Right.
And so we've had more than 65 people listening from about five countries, countries like China and the United Kingdom, obviously the United States, also Spain, and also also Indonesia.
Wow.
So to all those people that listened, and we don't even know how they find how they found us, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's really... You know, this, as Paco has said before, just privately, this podcast is a labor of love. You know, we're not setting out with these grand ambitions of getting paid to do this for a living or something like that, or, you know, nothing huge. We're just doing this because we love talking about the martial arts. We love practicing the martial arts, and to put it out there without any advertisement or anything and just see people all over, you know, really listen to it and engage with it. And we're going to be talking about that more later. But it's just been really gratifying and super inspiring. And also, I don't know about you, but it really got me thinking I want to do it right.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Now that there are people that are tuning in, you know, it feels like, hey, I don't want to just sort of freewheel this. I kind of want to make sure each episode really respects the listener and brings value to them.
Yeah, we thought it was just going to be our families, right? And
right,
it turns out there's a lot of people out there listening. Yeah.
I guess a lot of people like the martial arts, you know?
Yeah. And I know there's podcasts out there with like 10,000 people listening. I think it was very healthy that we didn't have any expectations into this. So, really, for us, that first response has been really incredible.
Really, really incredible. If you just sort of visualize 60 people from five different countries, if you visualize them all being in the room with you when you're having this conversation, I mean, that's a big deal.
That's
you know?
A big deal.
That's 60 people that have taken some time out of their life to try us out, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. I also wanted to say I'm back here at Erstad Recordings, and it never ceases to impress me. The setup you have here is really incredible. I'm very grateful because that makes this podcast possible, too.
Yeah. And let me take a second off that just to make a note for our listeners. We have a lot of exciting things coming up, and we've talked about guests that we're going to be having coming up. One of the reasons that we're taking our time about getting those guest interviews done is because I work in sound during the day, and I really want to try to make this podcast sound good. So I'm doing some research on the best way to do remote interviews, and so there's going to be sort of a delay between now and when we get those guests on and rolling, because I want to try and do that right for you guys. And so that's just a little note about the type of frequency of episodes we're going to have. And we don't have a set schedule because it's a labor of love. So, you know, we get together and we train, and then we are coming into the studio to do these episodes. So we have to make our schedules kind of match up and then match up with our guests to make all of this happen. So we did want to say, if you are enjoying, you know, if you enjoyed the first episode, you're tuning in now to the second, really the easiest thing to do is just to subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify or wherever. And then that way, when we do get an episode put together, it'll just hit your feed and you don't have to worry about, well, you know, Dan and Paco said every 2 weeks they're going to deliver something and then we fail to deliver. We're going to deliver you the best episodes we can, the best conversations we can, but it's going to be on this timeline where we can make it happen the right way, you know?
Yeah, and the focus is really in the quality, so we want to make everyone count.
Yeah, exactly. I personally wanted to sound good just so people can enjoy it and tune in and hear the content, you know.
Right. And you mentioned some guests being remote, so maybe it's a good opportunity to give a tease of what type of guests have we already been able to talk to in terms of them wanting to come and talk and be lined up for our interviews.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, the response, just like the listener response, the guest response has been great. I really didn't know that people would be so interested in taking the time to talk about their martial art and why they're passionate about it. But I've got an old friend from the Associated Press when I worked out there for a few years. After I left the AP, I noticed that he started posting on Instagram that he does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So his name's Anthony, and we're going to have him on. He's really passionate about it. Coincidentally, my next door neighbor is a professional drummer, but he also does Krav Maga. We have also lined up my first Wing Chun teacher, Li Ping Chang, from the Los Angeles area in California. So he'll be coming on, and I'm going to stop right there and turn it over to you and see who you have lined
That's
up.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. So yeah, another person within the jiu-jitsu world, someone that I happen to know due to work, and I think his name is Casey, and I think his life is a very good example of what I think the martial arts give us, which is determination and the ability to get up and continue fighting when life deals a hard one.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have him here soon, and he'll tell his story, which is one both of martial arts in and outside of the school, and how he didn't let any circumstances outside stop him from doing what he dreams of.
That's
so
great.
That's one of them. We also have a Krav Maga practitioner and someone who I used to train with when I was working in downtown Manhattan. And he's actually fairly renowned in the Krav Maga world. Mm-hmm. But even though we want to make this a home for the common person, I think he's going to bring a very different point of view.
Yeah. And let me just interrupt to say that when we say it's a podcast for the common person and for the common martial artist, that doesn't mean that we won't have teachers
right.
or coaches or people with a lot of experience on.
Right.
It just means that, you know, we're not going out there knocking on the doors of celebrities trying to get them
Correct.
On the podcast. But we are connected, obviously, and related to teachers.
Right. Right.
And we would love to talk with them.
That's a very good point, because I think being the home for the common person's journey means two things. One is that we bring everybody, even people that nobody
yep.
have heard about.
That's right.
But also that if we bring a teacher in this podcast, they're just people. They're just
right.
normal people that
right.
will that will tell us how they got into
yeah.
it and what it means to them. They don't come in the capacity of incredible, you know, masters of the martial arts.
Yeah.
So that said, we're definitely trying to bring people also from our system. So we
mm-hmm.
have our the people we train with and our teacher and our teacher's teacher. And
right.
and that is something that we are working on coordinating.
Yeah.
So that will definitely happen in the future.
And that'll be really exciting for me, because I've been invested in this particular system of fighting for a few years now. And, you know, I've never had a chance to meet the people surrounding our coach, our teacher.
Right.
So that's going to be fun to kind of go up the food chain a little and see who else is out there that's related.
Exactly. Yeah. So hopefully that will happen very soon. And another one that we have, and we're going to stop now, we're going to take a lot of time with this, but I think it's really exciting to see how many people have lined up, is a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a boxer that practices the old style boxing. This was without gloves.
Mm. That'll be fascinating.
It's bare knuckle.
Wow.
And I have personally put a lot of time into studying the incredible similarities between some of the Eastern systems
yeah.
and what is European old-style boxing. And we don't even know historically how come they're connected. But
right.
what they ended up doing from a body mechanics standpoint ended up being super similar.
Right.
And that is a fascinating
right.
topic to dig into.
Right. Great. Love it.
Excellent. So because we love the interaction, one of the things we wanted to talk about is what is the best way to send us questions. And we have to say, this episode is an episode on answering some of those questions. We have received more questions than we thought. We're really, really grateful.
more questions than zero.
More questions than
no
we thought,
idea.
Which was zero.
Right. I had no idea people would send us questions, and that has been the best part
yeah.
of starting this podcast.
Yes.
So I have to interrupt to say that, because I had no expectation, and I was blown away by the depth and seriousness and insight in these questions. And that people would take the time. So, you know, thank you guys.
Thank you, everyone. And I think it's so important for us, so much so that we are starting to realize it may very well be the main thing, the main theme of this podcast, which is when we take your questions and really dig into them, develop them. So we don't want to answer 10 questions in an episode because we want to select one and really dedicate time to answer it properly. So if you ask a question, we will get to it. It just may take a little while because we want to be respectful and take enough. Some of those questions are really deep.
Yeah, really deep. I feel that a lot of the questions we've received actually require historical research, that it can't just be us talking, because the question is so deep that we need to see what have others said about this, what have philosophers said about this, or martial arts experts, because they're deep. Yeah. So, you know, I can't wait to get to them, but they will take some time.
Yes. And we want to bring here our opinions, but also ask some of the people we respect and teachers that we've had what their opinions are on the answers to some of these questions. So one of the things we're going to do is when we come here with a few questions that we have selected for this type of episode, which we are going to title Ask Us Anything, AUA.
AUA.
We are going to come here prepared with some responses we've gotten from other teachers and then also our opinion.
Because the important distinction is that Paco and I are not teachers.
We're not.
We are practitioners, and we have coaches, and we have teachers, but we are not doing this podcast from a standpoint of we are representative of our system of fighting, or we are teachers in the system of fighting. We're students. So we will give our opinions based on our experience as students who love the art and the skill, but it's also a great opportunity to reach out to teachers and say, what do you think
exactly
about this? Yeah. So I just want to, you know, we kind of touched on that in the first episode, but I think this is a good time to just, reiterate to people that, we're not third degree black
this
belts in anything. Like we're two guys who love this, and we're going to try to make this a big, broad, diverse conversation. And when we feel it's best, we'll engage teachers and coaches to get their perspective.
Yeah. Extremely important. I'm so glad you mentioned that. We're not, we don't want to come across as teachers or even experts or anything.
Right.
The reason we do this podcast is a labor of love and passion.
Yeah.
We have a passion for the art, so we want to be talking about it. We want to be sharing it. It just happens when you love something very much. And also we have a passion to give a voice to other martial artists so that they can talk about it and create union between the martial artists. We want to create a sense of community and unity between them. That's what we're doing it. We definitely are just a vehicle to put that voice out, not the voice of expertise at all.
Right, right.
And so what is then the best way to send us questions? Although obviously people have found a way because we have gotten many good questions that impressed us.
Right.
But just so then to clarify, there's a number of ways. So we have a website, 1000exits.com. 1000exits.com is our website. And we have an email. Our email address is info@1000exits.com. So one way to do it is to just email us. Now, in the website is also blog format. So you can also put comments in any of the entries. We will see them. They come to us via email. And we will be able to respond to them. And we will use them also as a way to prepare topics for the podcast. So you can do it via the blog comments or email. And if you know us personally, then feel free to contact us directly to our numbers or email addresses. That's the best way to send the questions.
That's great.
So, Dan, you said we trained today, right?
Yeah, we did train today. Yeah.
Yeah. So we want to repeat this. I think it's the other day when we recorded, we did make a point, but I don't know that we emphasized it enough. We actually trained hard the other day before we recorded our first episode, and today we made it a point to train too. So a lot of the realizations in the martial arts, a lot of the reason I love it so much came from training, not from sitting down thinking about it. There's an entire level of experience when you do it and do it and do it. And so it's interesting we're translating that to the podcast.
Right.
We are podcasting, which is a great honor and enjoyment and a dream come true, but at the same time we do it after the training. Because
right.
The main reason Dan Dan and I meet is to train.
Right. The training comes first, and then we have a chance to talk about it.
Correct. And that's interestingly related to the question, one of the questions that we're going to be answering in a few minutes.
Yeah, because it might not seem like it, because right now it probably seems like we've spent an episode and a half basically telling you everything we're going to do, but we haven't done it yet. So this is actually going to be a functional episode.
Yes.
It has a point, and you know, we're going to get to that.
We're going to get to that. But should we talk a little bit about what we did in training today?
So I can jump right off the bat and say, in today's training, I thought we had a little moment where we were practicing a drill where if you throw a punch at someone and they respond to it, threading the needle for your second attack. So it's not just one attack, but it's one attack with the knowledge that you will be launching a second one. And in that, I thought we had a breakthrough where, I don't know if it's a breakthrough, but just something we connected on, which is, it's so easy to just throw punches out into the air. Once you get the basic form and structure of a punch, it's really easy to think you're punching well and, oh boy, look how strong and fast I am. But what we did today is we slowed down and we took our teacher's advice. Before you punch, aim. Take a look at what you're going to hit. Aim, see it, and then you can create the straight line punch from your body to that target. If you don't aim, you're throwing energy forward, but what that energy ultimately becomes is sort of a sloppy mess. It could be effective, it could not be. But by aiming, what George told me when I first started practicing with him, it's like a sniper rifle,
mm-hmm.
or like shooting a gun. You have to aim first, see the target, and then fire the bullet straight at the target.
Yeah.
And today we were kind of training hard, moving fast. We got into that drill, and about halfway through, I think we both had to say, let's slow down.
Yes.
Let's relax, and let's aim. So that's one thing I took away from today. And when you take that time to slow your body down, and it's not about throwing the punch as fast as you can, you slow down, you aim, and you move your fist towards that target, the feeling of it feels right. It always feels to me like, yeah, this is what a punch should feel like. Even though it's not as flashy, it's not as fast, the mentality behind it of accurately executing it being more important than sort of just whipping it out there is what I find valuable. And so I had that little moment today. I don't know if you recall that moment or if you thought that was valuable or you had a different insight from today.
That is very valuable. And it's funny because as you were describing it, very well described, Dan, I was laughing because I'm thinking back of training with George. And when you see that he's aiming.
Oh, my gosh.
Then you know you're dead.
You know you're dead.
Because I have never seen that anywhere else. I've never seen or felt that. When you're sparring with George and he's aiming, literally aiming, looks like he's aiming in a sniper movie.
Yeah.
And he's about to shoot, it mm-hmm. goes like a straight line to your chin,
yep.
and you're dead.
And I always feel intimidated by the very act of him doing the aiming.
Yes.
He just looks at me, and his fist is relaxed, and it's in a position where his eyes and his fist are lining up. And before he even moves, I feel claustrophobic. I feel intimidated.
You can't go anywhere.
I feel like he's already trapped my hands in that very, you know, well-known Wing Chun way. And I'm already up against the wall getting pounded on before he's even moved. All he's done is look at me with an intention. And I think that's the power of that sort of conscious awareness of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, of course, in a real self-defense or combat situation, maybe it's more instinctual. Maybe it is more, you know, you're moving your arms in a survival way or something. But to create that conscious methodology during drilling and training, very valuable.
Yeah.
And scary when you see someone who's good.
Exactly.
Do it.
Exactly. And it also makes me think about, you know, how we learn the martial arts. You need to experience it to try and replicate it, right? We're not trying about imitation. You will develop your own way of doing it. But when you are learning the skill from the very beginning of your babies in Kung Fu, you know, Kung Fu babies, you need to feel it. There is no way you can see this in a screen or through a Skype or something like that. You need to feel it. And someone who's doing it well and do it again and again and again. And that feeling you have, literally the feeling, not just the tactile feeling, but also the feeling of what's in front of you.
Yeah.
And digest that whole picture and then make it yours.
Yeah.
That is a feeling. The aiming is a very good example of that, as a thousand other things.
Right, right, right.
And there's another moment from our training earlier that I think was interesting that has to do also with the attitude of a fighter. we did a drill, also following the guidance of our teacher, in which we started the attack. So many, many times in these drills, the what we call the feeder is the person that attacks and we react to it. But today we did a drill in which the person we are attacking, and then we are having a second punch, which is this one we're going to thread, which we throw regardless of what the other person does to end that confrontation. So In that drill, we're simulating a scenario in which we know we have to fight, and we're not waiting there for something to come to us.
Mm-hmm.
We are attacking, and we're attacking mm-hmm. in a way also that does not depend on us being good at reading what's coming. We mm-hmm. just have something that we train a lot because it will work, or most likely work.
Right.
Obviously, none of this is 100%, right? So that was another interesting angle about what we were doing earlier today that I like a lot.
I actually was coincidentally just watching a video or studying up on this, but the difference between taking preemptive action or being the initiator or being the responder, and both of those have their value, and you can train both of them, but it's something interesting to think about.
Yeah.
Do you throw the first attack, or do you wait to let your opponent tell you how to attack them?
Right. And we are going to separate the self-defense and legal aspects of this into another episode.
Yeah.
But in this particular episode, we're focusing more on the skill development and the attitude development, which is also part of the skill. It's a whole, right? The body and the mind are one in the martial arts, and that's how we develop it and how we train it. So the drill had that interesting aspect to it, which is that we were launching an attack, and we were not counting on that attack to work, but it was a way to set the stage, which is also a pointer to the strategy in the martial arts. It's a fascinating aspect for me. The more I learn about the arts, the more I see that the very good martial artists are very good at strategy. So a lot of the stuff you do is to set up a scenario mm-hmm. that will create the right circumstance. But mm-hmm. of course, it doesn't mean that if it doesn't go that way, you don't have another answer. That's why we say 1,000 exits.
Right.
But that was in the practice earlier today. It was really good.
Yeah, it was really great. Great.
So, Dan, shall we move on to some of the questions that we have gotten today that we plan to be answering for our listeners?
Yeah, so now we're actually going to do what we said we're going to do, which is this is going to be AUA episode. Well, it's episode number 2, but it's the first AUA that we're doing, Ask Us Anything. And we've got a couple of quick questions, and then we're going to dive into the meat of sort of the main ones that we want to address.
Yeah.
So
the first one... this is a question that comes from Roma from New York. And then who is Roma from New York?
I think she's your wife.
Yes, she is. So thank you, Roma, for this question. We really, I think it's a very good question for our listeners. To be honest, I was having a chat with my wife, Roma, and she thought that it would be good for the listeners to even hear about how is it that we met and how is it that we ended up training together here in Peekskill, New York.
Yeah.
And how did that happen, Dan?
Well, it's interesting thinking back. Basically, it was very much an alignment of the stars, I think, because I had recently reinvigorated my Wing Chun practice. I was practicing with my original teacher on the West Coast, but traveling from New York to California for lessons is obviously pretty difficult. So I knew I needed to make a transition to finding a crew out here to work with or a teacher. And so I finally found our teacher, George, and trained with him for a couple years. And then I had to take a break when my wife and I moved, and we moved out of the city, out of New York City. And at that point, I reached out to George and just said, hey, is there anyone north of the city that I can practice with? Because it's hard, to spend 2 hours one way down to Brooklyn to train with George and then to do it back, especially with, marriage, a house, a kid, and all that sort of stuff. He referred me to you, and he gave me your email address. I sent you an email, or you sent me one. And right away, I could tell that Paco was really passionate. In fact, he's probably the first person I met whose passion for Wing Chun really totally overshadowed my own. And it was actually a big relief, because I could sort of just then shift into the role of enjoying it and let Paco do all the thinking, let Paco do all the arranging and working. And since that time, basically every time we train, he's driven 45 minutes north to Peekskill, where I live, to train by the river, to train at my house. We have breakfast, we catch up, we train, and now we're doing a podcast together. So, you know, Paco has become a dear friend, and he's really the heartbeat of really our collective Wing Chun practice. And I think the heartbeat of this podcast, he's kind of the spark that's setting this whole thing off. And I couldn't be more grateful. So that's how I feel. That's my perspective of how I know Paco.
How I experienced this is that I was training with George, and I had the desire to spend more time training than it was physically. So basically, I'm really crazy about this, right? And I'm looking for opportunities to train. And George had the suggestion, which I think for a teacher was a brilliant thing to do, that it would be healthy for me to experience someone else, maybe even someone who is big and strong, someone who's strong, because the martial arts feel different. And he suggested that I train with you.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that conversation had happened.
I was saving the surprise for our podcast. Like
3 years later, you know.
3 years later, listeners, you are finding this out at the same time as Dan. So he suggested that I train with you. He gave me your contact information too. And then we got connected via email. We met in Peekskill for a coffee one day by the river, Hudson River. It's so beautiful. I thought it was an incredibly beautiful place with the dock and the river. And I call that Paradise Avenue. I don't actually know the name of that street. And we talked. We exchanged our backgrounds and, you know, hit it off. I knew that I was going to have a wonderful time training with him. And we would become friends. And that's exactly what happened. But I also have to say something here, that out of this partnership, when it comes to training specifically, I'm a little bit more lucky. I get more out of it. I'm sorry to say this as a confession on air. I've chosen this time to confess this because Dan is very strong, right? And I'm not. So I get to work really hard for the martial arts. It pushes me a lot. So listen, I want to publicly say, I hope I'm doing good enough so that the training with me is valuable, Dan.
Oh yeah. You know, it's funny because I'm basically getting free Wing Chun lessons from George in Brooklyn through Paco, because Paco goes every week to train. And every week that we practice, he brings up a wealth of new knowledge, new drills. And it's been a really amazing thing. So yeah, I don't really like training with you. I just like the free lessons through you, you know?
All right.
Just kidding. Paco's great. And it's been a lot of fun. I think that we have a comparable level of skill and a comparable level of interest. And that really helps us engage and, I think, take off, you know.
I think it's good for the listeners to know we have trained together for a long time before actually starting the podcast. So we know each other very well, and we've trained together. So we've given ourselves the foundation of that training together, so that this is very real, because it's not like we met and here we are recording some thoughts.
Right,
not an intellectual exercise. It's born out of experience.
Yeah. All right. So what's the second question?
We have a second question, Sharuk from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how come I'm using the name Paco? So the other day, for one split of a second, you said Francis. Oh, I mean Paco.
Right.
So is my name Francis or Paco? And is this because of privacy? So I think I should answer that. It's definitely not because of privacy. My name is definitely Francis, right? But I was born in Spain, as I said in the first episode. In Spain, surprise, there is a name, Francisco, and the official nickname of that name is Paco, P-A-C-O. My father, to whom I dedicate this podcast on my side, and I think you also have a similar situation with your father, was my namesake. His name was Francisco, and he was Paco. Nobody ever called my dad Francisco. It was Paco, Paco, Paco. And so I could not be Paco, because I had to be some other name, right, to differentiate us. So I was either Fran, which is a name, a nickname of Francisco too in Spain, or Francis. I ended up being Francis in Spain many years before moving to the United States in my at work and with a lot of friends. I was Francis. But then as I moved to the United States for a few friends gradually, and definitely for this podcast, I thought it would be really nice to take this name. First, because it is my official nickname, since I am Francisco from Spain, and the official nickname is Paco. So that's like saying Bill and William are not the same name. They are.
Right.
And second, because it's a way to pay, you know, to dedicate this to my father, who was Paco. And after many, many years after he passed away in 1995, it's time for me to embrace that. He loved the martial arts. He planted the seed of love for martial arts and Bruce Lee in me. And it is an honor to use this name for this podcast.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, that's really, really nice. And it's actually been an evolution going from Francis to Paco for myself as well. When we first got together and met, of course, it was Francis all the way because that was his official name, his proper name, as best as I knew it. And then, you know, over the months and now years, it just gradually evolved to Paco. And so our text messages and when I talk to Paco, or I talk to my wife about Paco, I say Paco. I don't say Francis.
There you go.
She knows who I'm talking about. So the transformation is complete and we love it and we're glad you're doing your dad proud. So
thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Okay, so let's get into the meat of something that might bring out some technical conversation. Our first, I think our first listener question that involves some of the actual technical aspects of the martial arts.
Yeah. So today we have chosen a question. We've picked a question from Easton from Denver. And the question is actually two questions in one. I'm going to say the question and I'll let you take the first stab at it. So Easton from Denver, thank you very much. The question is, do you find it valuable to train with other people in your system, in this case, would be the equivalent of a Kung Fu brother, right? But someone who is a student under the same teacher or in the same school, do you find that valuable since you don't have the teacher to correct you?
Right, if the teacher isn't there.
If the teacher isn't there, and then are you not worried that they may not have that expertise to guide you? And then that question evolves into the next, which is, what about training with people from other systems?
Right.
Which I like a lot. I like a lot that he asked that question, and we're going to tackle it here, because it's what we were describing we did before the podcast.
That's right.
We were training together. So let's explain what we think about this topic.
Yeah, and it's the first question we thought we could answer with a full answer, because it's basically what we're dealing with every day that we train. So the first thing that occurred to me when I read the question was my original Wing Chun teacher, Li Ping Chang, from the Los Angeles area, as I mentioned before, would be a great person to ask because he's been teaching for decades and all sorts of different students. And when I first trained with him, I was very devoted and it was maybe 2.5-3 years of really intense work with him. And then I went away to college. And when that happened, I knew right away I would be finding other Wing Chun people to practice with and how should I approach that. So he gave me great advice at that time and I thought he would be a good one to answer this or to give us some insight into this. So he typed us out an email where he answered both of these questions. And I guess maybe I'll read both of them.
Yes.
And then we can kind of address both questions at one time because they're pretty related in their content. So I'm going to try and read this here without any cell phone interference, but this is what Lee says. He says, martial arts are all about human movements. When we move, our bodies send energies, and everyone responds to energies differently. Working out with different people allows you to experience different energies. You get to feel how your training partner deals with your energy. It also gives you an opportunity to go over materials you learned in class. Be sure to inform your teacher what you have been doing with your partner. He may make adjustments to your practice or give you suggestions. It is very important to practice correctly. Improper training only creates bad habits. Okay, so that's his answer to the first question about training with another student without a teacher present. And there's stuff to go into in that, which are really valuable. The second answer he gave to the question about training across styles. This is what Lee said. It's a great idea to train with people from other disciplines. It forces you to jump out of your comfort zone. However, we must remember movements are movements regardless of styles. Different styles use the same movements differently for different purposes. Any one movement can be used to strike, to lock, and to throw. Training with people from other styles allows you to see the many different ways these same movements can be applied. Keep in mind that when you train with other martial artists, you're not comparing styles. You're not trying to prove your style is better than theirs. Remember, training with other people should be a mutual learning experience rather than a contest. It should be about discoveries and growth. Ego has no place in such training. Be humble and treat your training partner with care and respect. Otherwise, no one will train with you again in the future. So I thought that was great advice.
That's great.
It's great. And in the first response, one thing that really stood out to me was the idea that when you train with a partner and a teacher isn't present, to then later take that experience and tell your teacher about it. Tell them what you're training, what discoveries you may or may not have had, difficulties, successes, and also I think on a very specific level, we train these specific punches. We train these specific sets of footwork or this part of the form. And then the teacher has a chance to give feedback to what you learned in that training and then to give more information for future training.
Right. Yeah. So I cannot even count the times that we have done that. I love that answer because, to be honest, is really what we do. How many times? First of all, many times when I come up here, George has made a suggestion for something to work on. So I come with an agenda and it comes from our teacher. Mm. Now, when we train together, we have the freedom to express it. I think one of the incredible things about training like this is that there is a very, very informal environment in which you feel that you can try things. Think of the training as a laboratory in which you are testing the body mechanics to see how they work. But then, as you train, when Dan and I are training, we come up with questions. We say, wait a minute. You know, we have to ask George this because maybe it's not working because we don't know how to do it, or maybe this is the best response for this.
Sometimes it seems like there's a simpler response. There have been moments where the drill is XYZ, and then we'll do it, and then I'll say, well, what about this?
What about doing this?
This is right in front of me. What's the purpose of doing
this
drill this way? And maybe that question is one that you need to consult George
on. And exactly, and we always do that. We go back to George, and then many times I remember coming back up and saying, hey, I asked the question, and here was the answer. Many times it's not what we expect.
Right, and many times, you know, we get cocky and a head full of steam.
Yes, we thought we had come out with the best exit in the world.
Right, we think we're so good because we're just training primarily with each other. And we have the best answer, best solution. And then Paco will take it back to George and see why it's not exactly all we thought it was wrapped up or, cracked up to be.
Exactly. Which basically is saying that it is extremely valuable, but we should not forget that layer of feedback back from the teacher because we're not at a level of being able to make that assessment ourselves. This is extremely important, right? The martial arts is a very subtle endeavor and takes many, many years. And, you know, we have the feeling when we do a drill, we have the feeling we're doing it very well. The moment you're doing it with George, he has 20 things to correct.
Right, right.
That is priceless. We need that. But then training when we train with each other, we have the freedom to express things and test things and be a little more daring and experiment with this.
Yeah. Would you say that it's fair to think about our training together almost as an open lab?
Yes.
Like, you know, we've entered the space together and then we have some ingredients, some components, some tools that are sort of in the lab already given to us by George. And so we work within the context of the instructions he's given us, but we can't help but say, well, what if we took this chemical and moved it over here? And what if we took this movement and moved it over here? How would that pan out?
And I think the beauty of it is we are encouraged to do so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's why he wanted us to train together.
Yeah, the worst that can happen is you can utterly fail. That's it.
Exactly. And you know how many times I've taken back to George even a video of what we do? Mm. And he looks at the video and says, well, I think you're leaning too much into this. I think... Mm. This is good, but maybe next time you do it, try to, you know, the balance or be a little lower in your stance, be more in the center. So he can draw a lot. He actually takes time to look at those videos and the photos and the questions that I come back with. So I would say, by the way, thank you for asking Lee. His answer was right on.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say what we're saying is that in our humble opinion, it is extremely valuable.
Yep.
But it helps more if you do it in the context of that feedback loop with the teacher,
right.
Because we're at a stage in which we need to know what's right or wrong. Mm-hmm.
And I think at any stage, you want to be
absolutely.
Learning and growing and testing.
Exactly, so. Exactly. So much so that the way I feel, I mean, this has been so important to me, how I have felt. We have both grown through our training together and taking things back to our teacher. So much so that I would perhaps go as far as to say that when you see a martial artist that has trained for many years but is really very good, you know, that feeling you have someone is good, when you see or feel what they do, it clicks. I bet they did both in a healthy balance. I don't think people got to that skill just because they went to class with their teachers. Mm-hmm. I think they got to the skills because they went to class, they learned things, and then they tried those things with people that were collaborating.
Yeah.
And the people that collaborate, when you train with your friends, with your partners, make sure you have a way to gradually increase resistance.
Yeah.
It's not about fighting like crazy from the beginning, because there would be no context to learn skill then. It's too much.
Right.
But not to make it too easy either.
Right.
So you need to follow that gradual. It's like a slider in technology, right? We have that way to gradually make it a little harder so then we're testing our skill and then go back to the teacher.
And, you know, one thing, and I don't know if this happens in other martial arts, but a lot of the people I've trained Wing Chun with, this tends to happen, which is someone assumes the role of the teacher. If you're like training, even, you know, the real teacher's not present, and then you have like a senior student and a mid-level student, or even, you know, you're training with a stranger who practices Wing Chun as well. It seems like there's this real inclination for someone to put themselves in the teacher role. And I think that's a bummer.
Yeah.
I think it's a real bummer because then it's about that. It's about, it's almost like Lee's answer to the second question. It's about someone proving something. So it doesn't even have to be cross systems. In the same system, it is so easy to train with someone where their intention subconsciously is to prove to you their dominance over you. And I know it's a bummer to me when that happens because I do it.
Yeah.
When we first started training, I did that.
Right.
There were many times where I would pause the training and say, try to quote unquote correct you for something that I saw that I was like, well, that's not how that should be or something. And I really, you know, upon reflection, I realized it's not really a constructive thing if the point of doing that is to express dominance.
Yeah.
I think it's very constructive as we've grown into training with each other now. And I've tried really to let go of that. And I think, like I say, I think we're very comparable now in skill. And I think the way we do it now is really much more healthy. You know, often you will say, I was working on this with George. And he corrected me on this. Let me know if you see it.
Right.
And then I will say the same thing. Like, oh, my knee isn't in the right place.
Right.
And let me know if you see it. So, and I think that's something that I've found to be much more healthy than, hey, I happen to have done this longer than you. And so therefore I'm in charge.
Yeah.
You know, that in charge, competitive, dominant spirit. It's natural to fighting, but we're not in a fight.
Yeah.
We're training.
Exactly. And as you said, it happens a lot in the martial arts. And it's unfortunately not helpful to learn, to grow, to develop skill. Remember, we are trying to create the right context to develop skill. That's martial art.
Right.
So it's a very subtle attitude. We want to bring up those things. If you see something that maybe my punch was, we were talking earlier about the straight punch, straight. And you see my punch is not straight. We're not saying hold back from making that comment. I would value that you make that comment, but it comes from a different place. It comes from a place of truly together exploring and developing that. And you can tell there's no ego there of saying I'm teacher or not. But you are bringing a good point that for many people who try this, perhaps that happens often, which is when they're training with someone and they're constantly coming from this place of ego, of showing I know more.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really not something I recommend. That's not a constructive.
Yeah.
This is not, martial arts are not an excuse for someone to validate themselves.
Right.
In fact, I would say the opposite. When you do the martial arts well, they really shatter your ego because it basically constantly showing you the gap between what you think you can do and what you can't do.
Right.
And the martial arts should, in a healthy way, show you how little you know. Because that's what we constantly do when we start sparring, when we start, things don't work that well and we're not that good. And I think it's really valuable when you get to a point in which you actually like that. You like being corrected because then you learn and then you grow. I rather have real development, even if it's very small, than this bubble of make-believe that it's not real and I have to protect constantly with my security.
Right.
We want to grow for real, so we have to leave behind this.
And I think, though, that's interesting. It shows your level of engagement with it at a philosophical or almost a spiritual level where you enjoy that process. I think I enjoy that process because I'm excited about what's on the other end of the correction. Mm. Today, we were working on some centering exercises and pivoting in Wing Chun, what's called a Lop Sau drill. And we were pivoting back and forth, and there was something I was trying to figure out. And, you know, you were showing me something about it and about what George had said. And my feeling was, I'm excited to take Francis's feedback because I want to get to the other side of it where right. I can do right. the thing. And I think it's a whole different level, a whole different interpretation of an activity to say, actually, what I get most out of it is just the act of yeah. having my ego knocked down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that actually applies really well to Lee's second answer there.
Exactly.
Where, you know, he said ego has no place in training across systems. So even I think whether you're training within the same system or across systems, Lee's advice was ego has no place there. Right. Be gentle, not necessarily be gentle, but treat your partner with respect.
Exactly.
And be humble. And I love the practical point that he made that if you don't do that, people won't want to train with you. And that's really true. Because when I used to train with the same groups over and over, oh, you know, here comes this guy. He's yeah. going to try and beat me up and prove how good he is. And I'm going to have to, you know, focus on that rather than focus on getting better. And maybe sometimes I was that guy. Maybe yeah. I was the guy that people would come up to and say, oh, I got to train with Dan again. Yeah. That sucks because he's going to throw me around or something. So, yeah. so I think Lee's really practical point is if you want people to train with you, whether in your system or their system, you have to start from a place of respect and be humble. It's not a contest. Unless you say it's a contest, then that's a different matter. But if it's training, if it's exchanging knowledge, it doesn't have to be a contest where it's about your ego.
And teachers can also help promote that attitude. I think we're very lucky that George has an extremely humble attitude. And for the cases in which he's had two of his students, which is not a very common thing, we normally train one-on-one. Mm-hmm. But for the cases in which he's had more than one student, he's very careful that we have the right respectful attitude. It's not a context. Mm-hmm. Nobody's there to win. And this is very important to understand. I'm trying to state something. Maybe it sounds a little over emphasized, but we are trying to create a context to acquire skill. When there is an attitude of who's best, you will not acquire skill. It becomes a battle of the ego. It's not a place where you will relax and be able to develop, period. It's not going to work. So even for very scientific reasons, you need to not do that. You need to relax and understand that this is a lab in which you yeah. are experimenting. And teachers can also do a lot to promote that attitude. So I love his response too.
Go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is that I agree with his response, but I'm a little... So I do recommend the training... cross. So what I mean is training with someone from another system, which mm-hmm. is very different than cross training, by the way. I'm not.
Yeah, exactly.
I am not talking about that in this podcast. Right. That's an entire different topic.
Right.
But, you know, having a friend who is a friend from a different system and exchanging healthily without yeah. that ego, without that competition, is just be very careful in assessing that. Because what I want to say is that it's easier than it seems. It's easier said than done to not make it a contest. Because the ego gets knocked out. Hmm. And Dan, how many times have we seen a YouTube video of a so-called master? And you can tell they are falling into the same trap. And yeah. then they go and break the rules of that drill because they want to prove they're superior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how many times have you seen a Wing Chun teacher be doing a hand-to-hand drill with a student and a senior student, and the senior student's doing great.
Exactly.
Senior student's holding their ground. And then all of a sudden, the Wing Chun teacher kicks them in the stomach. And it's like, well, okay, if this is just a sort of what they call guosao, or like, you know, like a free exchange or sparring or a fight, that would be fine. But you're doing a hand drill and all of a sudden, you know, you kick them in the gut to prove that you are
exactly.
still superior. I don't really understand unless they're doing that to demonstrate in that moment that, hey, be aware that kicking exists or throwing exists or locking exists. Other than that, it just seems to protect the image of the teacher who doesn't like the fact that even their own student is holding their own against them.
But if you wanted to teach that lesson, you would have said, you know what, we're going to do this trail.
Then
gradually, I'm going to just randomly try any random attack. So we're going to do that. But sometimes, if you do that from the beginning, you don't have the mental relaxation to master the basics first. We're trying to master some basics, these body mechanics. That half of an inch where the elbow is, how dropped the shoulder is going to be the difference between life and death. And you need to learn that.
Yeah.
And then there's a time to do that. Right. But many times you can tell in those videos, it's just a question of getting upset because the student is proving that he's really good or she's really good, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is that it's easier than you think. So watch for that defensiveness.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one thing, okay, I'm shifting a little bit of the direction of this. But one thing that Lee taught me when I was going away to college and I was going to be training with all of these different Wing Chun people, I also trained with Tai Chi people, Bagua people, like I mentioned in the first episode. Very amazing. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. I love seeing how well or how poorly my skills do in situations that don't fit my skills. I love that.
Exactly.
So, but when I was going up to college at that time, Lee said something... he didn't say it in these exact words. And even this last time when I trained with Lee for a year or so, and then came back to New York and knew that I would have to leave training with Lee to find someone here. We were going over some Chi Sao basics. And basically the gist of what he was teaching me is when you're doing training across systems, you can bring your own set of principles to that training.
Yeah.
Even though it's random, even though it's chaotic, even though if you're working with a jiu-jitsu guy, they're going to be grabbing your lapel and throwing you over their hip, or you're going to be rolling on the ground. Or in my case, it was because I was going to train with Wing Chun and Tai Chi people, or this last go around trained with just Wing Chun people, just from a different sort of lineage. Lee told me, you might find this. You might find that these new people you train with are going to try and go super fast. This is how you slow them down. Like, you can bring your principles. So if you're a Wing Chun guy, and when I used to train with the Tai Chi guys, Wing Chun is very linear. It's very direct, straight, and linear down the center line, down the center. So the combat line between you and your opponent is a straight line. You go right down that line and deal with matters. Tai Chi is a broader base, deeper, sort of like rooted system with circular movements. And, you'd have to ask a Tai Chi person what the core principles are. But you can engage that person in that exchange of techniques, that exchange of ideas, and still hold on to your ideas.
Yes.
Just because it's chaos or just because they do a different set of principles doesn't mean that you need to sacrifice yourself and what you've been trained to do and your own instincts in order to meet them halfway or something like that. Even if you're learning their set of techniques, like someone's throwing you showing you a wrist lock, someone's showing you an arm bar, you can still be aware of, okay, where's my center line?
Right.
In this situation, what is the most direct path out of this or into it? And it, in the case of Lee was very focused on yin yang. He was very focused on positive and negative forces and the balance of forces in the body and between people. So sometimes when someone would put me in an arm bar, my mind would immediately ask itself, if that were yang, where is the yin? He's moving me in this direction. Where is the balance to that movement? Where is the counter? Where is the exit to that movement based on this idea of balance? There is always a shadow side to what you're doing or a light side to what you're doing. So those kinds of principles, you can train across platforms with those principles, and you don't have to leave them at the door just because you entered a boxing ring.
Right.
You can get in that ring. You can box. You can even use boxing punches, gloves, headgear. You can do all of that, but still in your mind, be aware of what Wing Chun has taught you in my case, or if you're a jiu-jitsu guy or girl, be aware of what opportunities you see that fit your principles.
Right.
That's something that I wanted to bring up.
You should, because you're not doing that exchange to learn another art. You're learning that exchange to see how your principles are tested against something that's different.
Exactly.
That's precisely the value of that. Yeah. It's extremely valuable. And I think I would actually say that there is a point in your development in the art that you will need to do that to really develop. Because if you think, one of the aspects I'm really fascinated about is the history of the martial arts, right? So let's go back in time. The whole premise of the history of the martial arts, someone will find that they need to learn something like this, some sort of fighting or combat discipline, because they needed to fend off some attacker, right? Some bandit in between the two villages when they were crossing in the country or something like that, right? So the whole premise is the other person didn't have that art.
Right.
The
right.
art store were not created to fight art against the same art. That historically right. would have never happened.
Interesting.
There's no historical point at which that would have interest, except many hundreds of years later when there were jealousies between students. Mm. But that's not the origin of the arts. Mm. Your art has to be able to stand against someone, not just from a different art, but from someone who doesn't even have an art, but is just...
Which, by the way, is the absolute most terrifying.
It's the most
when
terrifying.
When someone is just randomly attacking you, I mean, the that
Viking,
is just chaos.
The Viking berserk attack in which you just swing the arms.
Yep. The berserker attack. That's what it is.
Didn't you have the experience when you played the martial arts games, Tekken or something, yeah. that the people who didn't know anything always won because they hit yeah. the buttons like crazy?
Oh, yeah.
So this is what happens too. There's a point in which it's healthy to have a friend, even a friend who's not necessarily going to formal classes, because you want to know how a person like that would attack. And even if you're trying to replicate random attacks in your own school with your friends, you are so used to the way you move that it's very unlikely you really will produce random attacks, even if you think you are. So you need to go to a friend and say, well, how would you just come like a crazy yeah. person to me?
Yeah.
You know, and those are the toughest.
Those are the toughest. And it's just, you know, one of the things that I really looking forward to is that when we interview my friend Anthony about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, we're going to train together first. And he's going to show us some groundwork.
Exactly.
And we're going to show him yeah. some Wing Chun. And that's a big part of this podcast. When we interview a Krav Maga guy, we're going to do some Krav Maga. We're going to do some Wing Chun. We're going to talk yeah. about that. And I just can't wait to get on the ground are on a mat
yes.
and know nothing. Because
know nothing.
It's like in Wing Chun, we do everything we can to stay on
do
our
not,
feet.
Exactly.
Do not get knocked down. There are reasons for that. There are combat
yeah,
reasons
yeah,
for that,
definitely.
Survival reasons on the street, all that sort of stuff. But just on a technical, physical level, we do not want to go down to the ground.
Right.
Again, my first teacher, Lee, had strategies for the ground. He was very expansive in that way. But in general, Wing Chun people want to stay on their feet.
Correct.
And I'm just really excited to get down on the ground and see if I can even do like a basic fall.
Yeah.
Can I do it? Do I have the guts to just let my body fall
exactly.
back? Exactly. And that's the value of going across discipline is their entire framework can be completely different than yours, but you're both addressing the same essential question, which yeah. is how to survive, how to prevail.
It's the same question. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we should explore that openly. So it's a very interesting thing because we related to the previous point of taking the ego out of the equation, right? This is not about getting defensive. Oh, you know, I don't go to the ground because this and that. Or people who say, we go to the ground because all fights end in the ground. Honestly, I don't care which is right. It's a wonderful scientific skill of the body mechanics. Let's learn it,
yeah.
right? Now, I've chosen this one because it clicks with me,
yeah.
right? But to explore healthy in a healthy way with someone from another style, what they do, also extremely scientific, you know, take my hat off right here. Let's give credit to the BJJ people who have come up with a system to test their skills without killing each other and going to back to their homes with a black eye, right?
Right, right.
I take my hat off to the fact that they have found a way to do that. And that's not that easy with a striking art. That's not that easy. And even though we have our ways to do it and our protection and gloves and all of that. So I think if you look at things from the standpoint of the body mechanics and the development of skill, again, not necessarily becoming that. I'm not talking about cross-training, but experiencing that because it will expose holes in your training.
Yeah.
That's a blessing.
And, you know, I don't want to be that sort of old man in the corner, you know, throwing out criticisms or something. Again, we're not teachers, so this is just my opinion. This is all an attitude that I have learned to adapt or adopt over the years. So actually, I think being a little older helps with this because I'm not 18. I'm not trying to be the master of a system,
no.
not trying to prove who's better in a street fight. And it makes everything much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I learn a lot more. So I think that, you know, if there are any young practitioners out there, you know, obviously you'll be deciding your own standard of ambition in the martial
right.
arts. But if you're sort of like us, you're doing it to learn, and improve yourself and gain some survival skills. One good way to learn is to just be a little bit older. And
be
a little bit older in your brain. Just relax a little.
Relax.
And when you train across systems or train with your partner without a teacher there, just be a little bit like an older guy.
Relax.
And you don't need to prove anything. Enjoy it and pay a lot of attention. Pay attention to the details and really notice your own mistakes. But just relax and you'll learn a lot more. You'll have a lot better time. You'll make better friends, better training partners, people who want to train with you. They'll call you up and say, hey, what are you doing? Got a couple hours?
Exactly.
Let's hit the mats. You know, that is the kind of training partner you want.
That's it.
You don't want the one that is like, hey, you want to train? And when they ask you that, you feel like, oh shit, now I'm going to have to get into a fight.
Yeah,
if I go,
an excuse and
right,
go the
right,
other
like,
way.
I got to make an excuse.
I got to make an excuse.
You don't want to
yes.
do that.
You
want to have
wanna
a partner.
That? You don't want to be that.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. You don't want to do it. You don't want to be that. You want to be the one that's in there positive, learning,
yes.
stay relaxed. Be a middle-aged guy or girl.
Be old.
You know, be old, have an
old,
old mindset, man. But, you know, I think our listeners understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and
relax.
And if you have this attitude, I would say, again, this is just our opinion, but
yeah.
if you have this attitude of, I want to take ownership of my journey, I'm a big believer, Dan, on this concept of, in the end, you own your path. So your teacher guides you, your friends help you, but in the end, you own your journey and you have to take ownership of developing it. You are the only one who can put yourself in the circumstances that will expose the gaps that you need to overcome.
Yep.
And what I want to say, really, the message that I'm very passionate about is any circumstance in life, whether technical in the martial arts or outside of that, that expose a gap in you, instead of making you insecure, be thankful. Because if you're a martial artist, you will have no way to develop and to grow if you didn't have a way to expose those gaps.
Mm.
So if I'm training with you and you make me aware that, oh, I had a fuxiao, I thought it was working, it turns out my fuxiao cannot hold anything, I am thankful. Because how on earth would I have a chance to overcome that otherwise and to grow and develop that skill? And it's the same when you cross-train. Right? Not cross-train, sorry, but train with people from another system is the same thing. I think it's a more valuable in the sense that there's going to be many more opportunities to show gaps. Be ready. Be ready for your stuff to not work that well.
Yeah. And on the other side of that is, in terms of a more positive expression of what you might feel, be aware of when you do have to hold back. Because there are many
yes.
times where you understand intrinsically that if I expressed this skill right now with all of my speed and power or with true intention, it would be very damaging. And this is not the context for that.
Right.
It's not the context to prove that, or definitely not to do it.
Not to
you
do
know,
it.
If you're training with a grappling person, they're showing something and all of a sudden you just launch a full force straight punch to their face.
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's actually a positive thing, to feel the power in yourself
right.
of what you've trained and say, I know I have skills that apply here.
Yes.
But if I use them completely and fully, it would change the entire context out of this training and into like a combat
yes.
scenario. And it's not to think you're a superhero or something, but to acknowledge, you know, if you see boxers use their hands, man, you don't want to be in a situation where they feel they really need to unleash that, because
right.
that is powerful handwork, you know? So, but I'm sure they feel inside them, they know their skill level, and try to, you know, you can feel confidence in that, happiness, enjoying that, security in that. And at the same time, the self-restraint to pull back and not use those skills in that way, because that is not the purpose of
right.
training across disciplines.
It's know? Not. There could be a context in which you have talked to this person and this person is at this stage that they want to experience that because they want to see if in the middle of rolling the ground you were to punch them, can they do something?
Right.
Then in that context in
yes.
which you have mentioned it,
mm-hmm.
you gradually bring that with that same slider we talked about.
Maybe that's another good piece of advice that reminds me of the Bagua guy. Maybe set some ground rules.
Right.
Right?
Definitely. You
just,
cannot
just
do this
set
without
some ground
that.
Rules. What? How hard are we going at this? What's the purpose of our training right now? And
yes.
I think that would be also another good tip. So you don't just say, hey, oh, you practice Aikido? Well, I practice Wing Chun. Let's just touch hands. Okay, what does that mean?
Right.
I mean, are you going to pop the guy in the jaw? And or
exactly.
What are you going to do? So set some ground rules. I think I'm trying to kind of summarize because I think we've touched on a lot.
Yes.
And you've hit a really lot of deep material there, really deep, and you know, dropping the truth bombs. So I think I'm right now trying to kind of come in and loop back to some practical things that you can walk into a training session with some practical tools. And I think they would be everything that Lee said: be respectful, be humble, treat your partner with respect. If you have the same teacher, bring your lessons back to them. Yeah. And if you're training across platforms, maybe set some ground rules. Maybe be a little bit like a middle-aged guy or girl and relax a little. You don't need to prove anything. What am I missing?
Nobody came out of there winning or losing.
That's right. No one came out winning or losing.
And I would go a little farther than that to say, if there was a feeling that you came out of there losing, you were the winner. Because now you have a lot of stuff to go back and think and improve. And that's the only reason you do that.
Damn, Paco. All right, man, let's just leave it right there. That's as deep as it's going to get today on our first episode of AUA, Ask Us Anything. Thank you guys so much for the questions.
Thank you so much.
And for tuning in. Again, keep sending in the questions. We will answer them the best way we can, or when we feel like we're ready to. We're going to bring in some historical reference, teacher advice, and that sort of thing. So be patient. If you talk with us, if you send us an email, a text, be patient. We'll get to it.
We'll get to it.
But we want to do it right. We gotta create a context where Paco can drop these bombs on you. I mean, this is great.
Every question is really a gateway for us to just talk about these fascinating topics, which is the whole reason why we want to do this podcast.
Yeah.
So, Dan, thank you very much. Yep. Thank you to our listeners.
Hey, everyone. Have fun out there. Train hard. And we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks a lot.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye. Hey everyone, during this last episode, we referenced an answer given to a listener question by my original Wing Chun teacher, Lee Ping Chang. We wanted to give you some information on Lee in case you wanted to look further into him and his teaching methodology and his Wing Chun practice. So his website is WingChunKungFuForSelfDefense.com. And that's all just spelled out normally. So once again, it's WingChunKungFuForSelfDefense. You could also Google Lee Ping Chang Wing Chun and he should come up. Also, every now and then, there might be a part of our conversation that doesn't quite make the main cut, but that we still want to share with you. In this case, we did cut out a little bit, and we're going to be including those in separate episodes called B-roll episodes if we think the information's interesting, but it just didn't quite fit the full main body of the episode. So be on the lookout for that. In this particular B-roll episode, we go over how we came up with the podcast title in detail, and Paco also shares some thoughts on different training methodologies and how he feels like that's what distinguishes different martial arts systems from each other. All right, guys, thank you very much. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that you stay tuned for the next one.